I mean, is this the real life?
Or is it just fantasy?
It could just be fantasy. And possibly we're caught in a landslide. Who knows?
Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In this episode, Mark and I continue our conversation about the simulation hypothesis. In our first episode, we discuss the philosophical underpinnings of this hypothesis and some of the science that is being applied to try to determine whether or not it is true. Today, we are going to work at answering a simple question. Well, if we are in a simulation, how would we be able to tell? Thank you for coming and listening to us each week. We really appreciate it. And if you do like us, please share us with a friend. Hi, Mark Snedeker. I almost forgot that last part.
I know. You have to share with friends. Hello, Christina LaRusso. I think the most useful thing you say in that entire introduction is, this is a podcast. In case they thought they were like tuning in to hear my latest rap album. Or possibly poetry.
You know, it's all the judgment for me, Mark. It's the judgment.
No, I think it's good.
Constant judgment.
Because right away, they're like, oh, this is a podcast.
Stop it.
They adjust their expectations to, I'm going to be listening to podcasty stuff.
Uh-huh. Okay. Anyway, moving right along.
I mean, you can if you want.
Today, we are going to have you actually run the simulation,
yeah,
as it were.
Possibly go wrong.
You are taking charge. We've both done some research on this subject. How will we be able to tell if we are in the simulation? And we've had some, I guess substance-fueled conversations about this.
That makes it sound like we're on drugs.
Well, I mean, there may have been some beverages imbibed.
Oh, yeah, those. I thought you were like literally saying substance fueled, like that's some term that I should understand.
No.
In like academia or something.
No.
So, yes, we're going to take more of a substance fueled approach to the American colonial experience. I mean, I guess we're drinking a lot of cream ale. I don't know.
No. So from time to time, you will have some, not during this, because I don't bring the wine anymore.
There's zero here.
But we've had conversations where there have been some substances involved that have gotten kind of deep and
whatever.
Heavy.
I'm just as competent drunk as I am sober. So. Which is to say not that competent.
All right. Why don't you leap into it then?
All right.
Are we doing hot takes? How do you want to run this?
No, there's no hot takes for you.
Okay.
You get nothing like it.
All right.
So just to remind everybody, the simulation hypothesis was articulated, let's say, in 2003 by Nick Bostrom. He's a philosopher. He basically said that in all likelihood, we are living in a simulation. But there's the rub right there, right? There's a high probability based on his assumptions that we're living in a simulation. So one of the things we mentioned last time we discussed this was, well, is this really an evidentiary-based claim, though? Is there any way we can test it? Well, why don't we start this way? What are some ways that you can think of that might either indicate that we are or aren't in a simulation? What are some of the things that occur to you?
There are some things that I just think are out there and associated now with this, like the Mandela effect.
Right.
I did a deep dive into Philip K. Dick.
Oh, did you?
And that was interesting because he's been, or was, and he's dead now. Obviously, he died in 82, but he was really kind of banging the drum back then that there were alternate
universes. Yeah, with universe. His
Blade Runner. Yeah. Well, and I mean, a lot of it was drug fueled. He was also substance.
I mean, you know, there's a long and proud tradition of drug use among authors. So
yeah,
can't be shocked by that.
So there's that. But honestly, one of the things that when I first heard a podcast about this, I don't even know how I lit upon this subject, but I heard a podcast about it and I thought to myself, I think that time is a factor in this. I think that because time is a strange thing.
And it's fleeting.
The way time works strikes me as there's going to be a factor around time. If we are able to figure out that this is a simulation, something about time is going to, it's going to come down to that, about time or the speed of light. I think also that's another factor in this. But anyway, so that's...
If you were a Doctor Who fan, which I know you're not particularly, not that you have anything against it.
No, I don't hate it. I just haven't watched it. Although now I want to because of David Tennant. Kind of crushing on him since Good Omens.
He's a great actor.
Wasn't he the Doctor twice?
He was Doctor in two separate iterations, yeah, but it was the same guy. He just came back for a cameo, I think. So anyway, they describe the universe as being timey-wimey, which is just their way of saying basically that time is mysterious and kind of wobbly, right? And they would, I think, agree with you that the ultimate solution may be in our discussions of how time be.
Yeah, the space-time continuum and all the rest. Yeah,
sure.
But what is your hot take?
Well, my hot take is wait till you listen to my warm take. It's a little bit longer that I've prepared at great personal expense. Obviously, if we want to test if we're in a simulation, you know, like it's not the Truman Show, right? You're not going to a light from the roof isn't going to fall onto the street right next to you,
right?
So there, I have six separate kinds of tests for testing if you are in a simulation or not.
Wow.
Some of them are going to be better than others.
Okay.
Presumably. So the six different types, and we'll go into them as we go, are reality glitches, the world of quantum physics, simulation hypothesis testing, i.e. making your own simulations, simulation detection tools, creating an advanced AI, and inconsistencies observed in the known universe. Mm-hmm. So reality glitches, I think you want to talk about, you know, like the Matrix, right? Where the cat walks by twice. But really, any kind of violation of the physical laws of the universe. So can you think of any examples of something like that? Like if you're going to look for reality glitches, what kind of stuff are you checking out?
That I know have happened?
Well, it doesn't have to be, or you can imagine a circumstance.
Well, it would have to be, well, rendering would be one right. thing. So like so you said, well, a light's not going to fall out of the sky like in the Truman Show. Well, no, because we're not saying this is a movie production.
Right.
We're saying it's a computer simulation. And what I always think about is, you know how when you're playing Minecraft and you really get going on the boat, and you're sailing across the water,
right, and everything is all
and
pixelated.
It's not it's not rendered properly in front of you, right? So, you know, you joked about this in the other episode where you like keep trying to look at me quick to see if I've rendered.
Yeah.
So something like that where something wouldn't look quite right, or if you're observing it, it looks one way, but if you're not observing it, it behaves a different way, and there is an actual test that they've done to. With two slits, right?
Yes, that's the two-slit experiment. Mm-hmm. So basically wave-particle duality, but that's going to be in our quantum physics section.
Okay, so that would be it, right? So something looks one way when you're observing it,
right.
But is different when you're not observing it, or it just doesn't exist when you're not observing it.
I'm a big fan of the Looney Tunes franchise, right? Mm-hmm. Love all their work, except for the racist stuff. Do you remember the episode where they have, I think it was Daffy, was being drawn, like actively drawn during the episode, and he was complaining to the artist, and the artist kept erasing things and changing things or whatever?
Vaguely, but I know I think they've done that conceit with other
cartoons. Sure. So they will draw Daffy and then give him flower petals around his head, and he'll, you know, predictably throw a fit, and the guy will erase it, but then he erases his beak, right? So he can't make any noise. So
that's right. I remember when he doesn't have a beak.
So he just has this like little round black Q-tip head, which is pretty funny stuff. But, you know, obviously something like that, I mean, Daffy has to think, hey, I live in a simulation, right? I'm interacting now with the artist who's changing reality around me based on what I'm griping about. So I don't think we can really hope for something like that. But certainly if you saw, you know, some giant hand come out of the sky and adjust a mountain or something, right, you might get a clue that there's something sketchy going on. But basically, reality glitches. You expect reality to behave some way, and then it behaves a different way.
Well, does deja vu fall in there?
Well, that's a good question. I think it does. So then you think about something like deja vu, which is, hey, I've been in this exact situation before. Mm-hmm. This is a replay, mm-hmm. right? It's a fucking simulation. I knew it. Then you have to think about, okay, deja vu. What are explanations for deja vu that are not the simulation? Mm-hmm. Well, it's a neurological response. You know, it's very similar to something you've gone through before, or your brain just got lazy and replayed some loop that makes you think of it. Or, you know, it could be you've legitimately gone through this before and the simulation is giving it another go. Mm-hmm. No real explanation as to why your memory's carried over, but maybe that's a glitch too.
Yeah.
Right. So certainly deja vu has been used as a support for the simulation hypothesis.
Okay. So Philip K. Dick is talking about deja vu, but how he talks about it is that there's sort of like different universes, mm-hmm. but kind of like at a right angle. And, yeah. and then when the creator of the programmer of the universe goes back and fixes something, then you do relive. And that's yeah. the deja vu.
Yeah. But we're running this routine again after I've changed some parameters,
debugged it whatever. Or whatever else it is, yeah. right? Whatever reason there would be a correction. So that's why it seems very similar. It may not be exactly the same, but there's a familiarity to it. Now, I'm quoting him because he talked extensively about this and did this like really insane, unhinged talk.
Keep in mind, on drugs.
In Paris yeah. or in France. And it is worth whatever it is, 20 minutes that this thing lasts to watch this, because he is in earnest and he sounds
semi-sane.
No, it sounds, you listen to it and he's like, I know that this sounds crazy, but I'm being totally serious here. I'm not joking around about this, but that's the way that he explains deja vu, and that would fit into it. But it is a simulation, but he's talking about simulated multiple different universes at the
sure,
same time.
Sure, because why would there just be one?
Why would there just be one?
One simulation.
There wouldn't. But then what he hypothesizes is, or what he theorizes, is that we move from universe to universe, that we experience multiple universes.
They just reuse our avatar or something?
I don't know. Okay. That wasn't perfectly clear to me what he was saying.
So now, did you ever see Blade Runner?
No, I never watched that.
Okay, so Blade Runner is a book of the book was Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Mm-hmm. And the premise behind, and it was made into the movie, Blade Runner, starring Harrison Ford and Rutger Hauer. Mm-hmm.
And cool, then there's cool a new one.
There's a newer one, yes, that's correct, which also has Harrison Ford, but some other dudes.
Yeah.
So Harrison Ford's job in this movie is to detect replicants. Replicants are humanoid robots that simulate being human. And it's very difficult at this point in the technology to tell whether they're humans or replicants. And they have very strong prejudices against replicants, you know, because they're not human. So he does this test where he will measure their pupil response to empathy inducing questions, right? And apparently they don't do as well on the test as a human would. You know, he'll say, imagine you're in a desert and there's a tortoise and you turn it over on its back and it's struggling to get up. And then he measures their response, right? And it turns out that there's a replicant that he's interviewing that doesn't even know that they're a replicant. Mm. So there's your simulation. They are being simulated and they don't even know it. And then there's a surprise ending. Hey, guess what? Harrison Ford's also a replicant.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really good movie.
Spoiler alert, everyone who hasn't watched it.
It's only been out for 40 years. Okay. If you haven't read it by now, not my fault. So, you know, that he was dealing with some of those issues. Like, how can we, if we make a perfectly simulated robot, mm-hmm. how can we tell the difference? And this is how they did it, was this, you know, this emotional test. Mm-hmm. And there's a question as to whether, you know, how reliable it was. So, yeah, I mean, he's a fascinating author. And I think we should definitely post that rant.
Yeah,
that
it's
he did. We'll post
really
it on the
wild. It's a very interesting conversation that he has. And he gets into, like, his history plays into this. So you've got to understand that you can't take that at face value.
Right.
There's a lot that plays into how he got himself to that place. But he's essentially saying, I experienced being in a parallel universe.
Right.
And I know that some of the things that I've written about in my books, like the Man in the High Tower.
Right. Which also got made into a really a good TV
series. Great TV series.
Yeah.
He says, you know, that's true.
Yeah.
That's.
Oh, okay.
You know, like that universe exists. It's not just my fictional imagination.
All
that's
right.
real. And that happened. And but then there's
that's an excellent marketing technique.
It's wild how
so
he goes down.
So if you liked it as fiction, now go and buy another copy and reread it as nonfiction.
Yeah, right. But anyway, yeah, we should post it. But that would be that's one way that deja vu is explained as being part of a simulation or as a part of an alternate universe that is being programmed. I mean, he says it's programmed. There's a creator / programmer. He's talking about God, but
So reality glitches are definitely one of the first things we think of when we're trying to figure out if we're in a simulation, right?
Is the
Mandela effect
would
also
a reality
be,
glitch?
If it's actually because of it being us being in a simulation, certainly because they changed something, right? It's a glitch. Everybody knows it was Berenstain Bears, not Berenstain Bears, bro. And we remember it the way it was, but you guys changed it for some nefarious reason, undoubtedly.
Well, there's been a really recent one, Bob Barker dying.
Now, see, that one didn't affect me at all because I knew he wasn't dead. So I don't know why people thought he was
dead.
I thought
he was dead.
Well, I mean, he's 99 years old or whatever. Of course you thought he was dead. I don't know that was a great one, but...
But, I mean, it's the same as Mandela.
Yeah,
like, people thought Nelson Mandela died in prison, right?
And they have specific memories of, like, you know, Winnie Mandela walking along his casket or whatever. Which is wrong. I mean, it didn't happen that way.
It didn't happen that way. Maybe
at least
it did.
The current iteration of the universe.
In this universe,
no.
It hasn't.
That's right.
But and Jif and Jiffy, peanut butter.
I didn't really eat peanut butter, so neither one of those really had a huge impact on me.
What's the matter with you? Don't you like peanut butter?
I like it only in one limited sense, and that's with chocolate. That's it. I don't like it on bread. That's just like a gooey, gummy mess.
There's something the matter with you. Maybe you are a replicant. All right, go on.
Maybe.
Go on.
Did my pupils change sizes when I told you I don't
eat peanut
butter?
You're not particularly
like
empathetic, so.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Proof positive.
Sorry.
And I don't know what other kinds of, you know, reality glitches we would expect other than, you know, certainly we do encounter them in science when classical Newtonian physics was the rule of the day. Nobody thought there was any other kind of physics. And then they're starting to observe distant interstellar objects and they're doing weird things like wobbling or twinkling or lights being bent around and stuff. And they're like, now they could have gone one of two ways. They could go, oh, maybe there's more science to do here, or maybe we're just in the matrix and that's just a glitch, right? So most of the time we meet these unexpected quote unquote reality glitches, we assume that there's just new science to be done here. We had Newtonian physics. Now we have Einsteinian physics. We have relativistic physics.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to change shit in order to accommodate that. And then as we learn more and more about the universe of the very, very small, we're like, well, now we got to add quantum mechanics, you know, to it. And that's one response to these glitches. But let's say it's a glitch that we can't find an answer to. Then you have to kind of make a choice. Am I going to take this as evidence of a simulation? Or am I just going to go, we just haven't figured it out yet?
Well, I mean, are you asking me that question?
I'd
say
more appealing
it's a
to
sign
you.
of a simulation. Right. I'm really invested in this theory.
I know you are.
I really am. Now, or find the science that disproves it.
I mean,
right?
That's what science's job is.
But yeah, I think that I would be inclined to say, well, there is that, you know, there's these kind
it's
of outlier
glitchy.
Weird things that we can't yet explain, and absent any other thing, maybe that's like a coding error that
right.
we're seeing.
So that leads us kind of into the quantum mechanics.
Go ahead. Let me say this though. So if it's a coding error and then the coding is repaired, could the repair of the coding be that you discover the science that explains it?
Sure. So they could say, let's say the coding error is the speed of light is off by 1 kilometer a year or something like that. They like, oh, fuck, you know, the boss is going to kill me, whatever. So they fix it. And then scientists discover, oh, no, that was actually correct all along. And we'll just chalk that up to a mistake we made or whatever. But if you have measurements of something at one point in time that should be constant, right?
Like Avogadro's number.
Yeah, which they changed on me.
Yes, see? And,
which makes me very
angry. I heard that held up as a sign that perhaps there was like a coding error and then it was corrected and now they changed the number.
I just think it was just, you know, scientists fucked up a little bit and but anyway, yeah, so you can look at it, you know, one of two ways. Again, we know which way you like to look at it. So, but that can be taken as evidence for it. Now, the tricky thing is to try to think of some of these tests in terms of proof. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's very hard to tell whether you've uncovered evidence of the simulation or you've uncovered a gap in our scientific knowledge, mm-hmm. or you've made some error in some way, right? So that's the tricky part, and we can discuss that as we move on. So that leads us into quantum physics, which I know you're pretty much an expert in.
Well, I feel like, so here's where I feel like I could have really been a shining star as a science person is in stuff like that, like science like that, where you could just say crazy shit and people are like, yeah, you know, that's like real outside of the box thinking. I know that it's all rooted in numbers and math and all of that. So that's where, again, I would fail. But there are
great scientists who were not great mathematicians. If you remember a movie we just saw recently, right? Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
You know, he was always a better mathematician than me. And Einstein's like, I'm not a great mathematician.
Nah, yeah.
He's a pretty good mathematician.
Yeah. I mean, not a great mathematician. And it's still, comparison to
Tesla, maybe. I don't know. You know, whatever. But yeah, there is a lot of, especially on the very fringes, right?
Like the theoretical stuff is really interesting. And I like that. I'm really comfortable in places where it's very theoretical and kind of,
it's very
like,
mind-bendy.
It is. And you kind of go, ooh, you know.
It's also a little timey-wimey.
It is mind-bendy and timey-wimey. So I feel very comfortable there. Yeah. I know nothing about how it works, but I feel comfortable when people are making.
I think you would enjoy like a quantum physics book written for non-mathematicians or whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. So here are some of the things in quantum mechanics or quantum physics that may indicate the presence or the existence of a simulation. One is the fact that many, many phenomena are observer dependent, right? The results change depending on whether you're observing the phenomenon or not. Mm-hmm. And presumably they ought not to change, right?
Right.
I mean, physics is physics. Doesn't matter if I'm looking at it or not. But the act of observation changes the way some of these phenomena are.
How can that be?
Well, I mean, that's a very reasonable question. So there's a principle in quantum mechanics called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Mm-hmm. It does not have anything to do with not knowing who the drug dealer was in Breaking Bad. Heisenberg said that for at the quantum level, we can know either the velocity and direction of a particle, or we can know its location. We can't know both. That's because as soon as we go to measure one or the other, we change the other state. So if we know the location, then we don't know the speed or direction that it was traveling. We just know what that location was. But if we know the speed and location, speed and direction it's traveling, we don't know the location, and it's kind of complicated.
Shouldn't you be able, though, to calculate the location based on knowing its speed and direction? I feel like I've done that word problem.
Yeah, it was in those locations prior to now, but we don't know where it is right now. That's because in order to measure the location, you have to interact with the particle in some way, and that changes the velocity and the direction.
Yeah.
Right? You can't watch it with your eyes because photons are much larger than a quark.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't use – photons are not bouncing off of the quark to tell you where it is that you can see it, right? They exist on a much, much smaller level. And light – more accurately, light waves are much larger than a quark, so you won't be able to get any kind of feedback from a light wave, because if you hit a quark with a light wave, you're sending that quark off. I mean, it's a home run, right? Mm-hmm. It's going over the left field fence,
mm-hmm.
back, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to like look at them in very indirect ways. But once you know where the location of that quark is, then we know no information about the previous speed, velocity, future velocity, whatever. All we know is it was here at one point. So that's one of them, is the fact that the observer is somehow important to the kind of data you get. And that's where the double slit experiment comes in. And again, that's a kind of a complicated one. I know there's like a little gnat or something flying around here. That's also a complicated one to explain, but here's basically did we talk about double slit last time?
No, we didn't talk about double slit.
Okay. So the double slit experiment, basically, if we assume that light, it travels in waves, right? And there are peaks and valleys to the wave. When it interacts with another light wave, it can either, the peaks and valleys are additive, basically. If it interferes with another light beam, if it's two valleys, you're going to get, you know, a lower valley. If it's mm-hmm. two peaks, you're going to get a higher peak. If it's a peak and a valley, it's going to cancel out and it's going to be at the zero state, right? Mm-hmm. So if we think of light as light waves, we can understand how, you know, if you shot a bunch of them at a wall, they would interfere with each other in certain ways, and you might get some light bands and some bright bands where two peaks have come together, collided together, dark bands where two troughs have collided together, et cetera. Mm. So we know that if you shoot a bunch of light beams through two slits in a partition, that light will interfere with each other in certain very predictable ways.
And if you're observing it.
You can always observe it once it hits the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no longer, those photons are no longer there. They're bouncing off somewhere else. But you can observe it that way. But it turns out that even if you fire a single photon, one photon, through the slit, it will appear probabilistically in a light band where you would expect to see it if it was interfered with by other waves. So you've shot this single photon, and if you shoot it 10,000 times, you'll get a pattern that looks exactly like the wave interference pattern, even though there's nothing to interfere with it. And it can't possibly even know that there's a second slit there, but yet it acts as if it's gone through both slits with interference waves, et cetera. So then they were like, you know what? Let's set up a photon detector just on the other side of the slit to see which slit it's going through and what the fuck is making it, you know, act like it's, you know, interfering with, you know, dozens of other light waves. So once they put that slit there, the diffusion pattern goes away.
The detector there.
Once they put the detector on the other side, then it just acts like a particle. It shoots through the slit, hits somewhere on the wall, whatever. And it doesn't act like a bunch of waves. But if you take that detector away, right back to the double slit pattern. And if you leave the detector there but turn off the power to it, it still behaves as if that detector isn't even there. So how does the photon or electron or whatever you're using, quote unquote, know that we're doing that?
Yeah.
Right. And how does it know? And this, by the way, works even if you use a photon from the other side of the galaxy. Like this thing has been traveling for billions of years. We've sent it through our double split experiment, and it behaves just like if it was a single proton. So there's none of this like, oh, okay, well, the photon interacts here, so it goes back to the beginning.
So it'd have to go back in time.
That's one of the options.
See, there's something fucked up about this.
It's so timey-wimey.
It is. There's something fucked up about
right.
this.
So that's the wave-particle duality is a, again, it could just be because we're poorly understanding the physics, or it could be an example of they got a little lazy with the simulation, right?
Well, and I mean, think how granular that is.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like, think how granular. Yeah. That's not like you walk outside and a tree renders
right. You gotta slowly. Have, yeah, you got to have life in like 4K.
That is like an insane level of granularity.
It is.
For, you know, and then they're probably like, well, they'll never notice.
Yeah, I mean, how are they going to see that?
They're never going to notice.
They can't even see it with a light wave, for fuck's sake. Oh, those clever little devils.
Oh, they figured
out the double slit experiment. Another strange one is something called quantum entanglement. So let's say that you have a nuclear reaction and it creates these pairs of particles. Just trust me that they actually do this. Mm-hmm. One's an electron, one's a positron. And they're created at the same time. Those particles are now what we call quantum entangled, which means that if you take the electron and you change its spin in some way.
The other thing changes too.
And it's instantaneous, which violates the rules about information transfer, which we thought was limited to the speed of light. To me, I mostly think of that in terms of this could be a really useful long-distance communication device, because that's the most annoying thing about science fiction space travel is if you're like, oh, they're on the other side of the galaxy. Let's see how they're doing. Oh, it's going to take 12 billion years for us to hear back, right? That's not fun. Mm-hmm. You want to have that immediate, you know, hey, the Klingons are here, whatever it is, reaction. So in Star Trek, they call that the subspace radio. I think you could probably make a communication device out of entangled particles where you would get an instantaneous response. Hmm. But that is a very strange thing because you could take that particle and shoot it off to the other side of the galaxy, and they would still be quantum entangled.
It's
so that's
interesting,
whack.
But it's not to me as weird as you unplug the power source from the observer
right.
mechanism.
That is
and the thing
wacky. It's wacky.
Somehow knows.
And by the way, if we get the science wrong, fuck off. Who cares? you get the point.
Right, right. It's crazy. It's crazy.
So we have the observer-dependent quantum universe. Mm-hmm. We have wave-particle duality, mm-hmm. as illustrated by your little double-slit experiment, right? Mm-hmm. We have quantum entanglement. And then we also have quantum uncertainty. So in the world of normal physics, mm-hmm. if we know the parameters of an experiment or of an event, we can figure out the result. If you know that the baseball it was hit at an angle of 37 degrees mm-hmm. at 100 miles per hour coming off the bat, and you know the wind is blowing in from left field at 10 miles an hour, you can calculate where the ball is going to land. With quantum mechanics, there is a matter of chance involved. You can only say there's a percentage chance it'll be here, and then there's a smaller percentage it'll be here, kind of like the double slit experiment. Mm-hmm. But you can only really predict probabilities. And so there's a certain randomness in the quantum realm that there isn't in the regular physics realm.
Are you saying that quantum physics has come along and said, well, you might think you know where it's going to land, but there are quantum factors at work here
right.
that you're not going to really you know where
right.
there's a high probability that you're correct,
yeah.
but there's also a probability
that's a,
that
that's
you're
a
not
realistic
right.
that's a actually a good point to make. Quantum effects are very, very, very small. So in the world of Newtonian physics, it doesn't have a measurable effect at all. Theoretically, yes, at the quantum level, you couldn't track every single quark or lepton or hadron or whatever you're trying to track. But you could track the baseball mm-hmm. and you could put a mark on the grass and you know where the baseball is going to land.
And well, is that because the baseball is big enough?
Yeah, that it just isn't affected by quantum mechanics. And even before quantum mechanics, there's relativity. And at lights significantly below the speed of light, or speeds rather, at significantly below the speed of light, how many people have we lost? Is everybody still here? Okay, at below the speed of light, the effects are negligible. Like it's just a rounding error. I mean, you can't even tell.
Yeah.
But if you accelerate that baseball up to 99% of the speed of light, then shit starts to get weird, and you have to use relativity to calculate anything about that baseball.
Yes. And see, the speed of light is one of my things that I think is going to be, and I'm not alone in that. I thought, ooh, I'm onto
it's
something.
It's a weird limit.
And then
everybody
was onto that.
I know.
I was so disappointed.
You should have published.
I was like, oh, I feel like I've cracked the case.
Yeah. You should now tweet all of your science thoughts just so at least you have some evidence that you thought it first.
But I think that there is something to that might be something that is baked in by the programmer.
To keep them from having to render the universe too fast or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a limit. It's a control on the universe.
Right. Just like if you're Steve walking through your Minecraft world, it's possible you'll run up against the edge of the universe at some point. Now, Minecraft worlds are very, very, very big.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've played plenty of video games where you just can't go. Like, you're playing Mario or whatever. And it's like, no, you can't go past that wall, dude.
It used to be with Minecraft that you would run into the, like, you can hit the bottom. You can't, there's a place,
bedrock.
I think, where you hit bedrock and you can't go beneath that. And but it used to be that you'd be digging in a tunnel and then all of a sudden you couldn't move anymore. So then, but now it seems
the worlds
it's
are
just,
so much bigger.
They're bigger now.
You'd have to play for so many years to try to get to the edge.
Right. So what, so the speed of light prevents us from doing something like, for instance, from a statistical standpoint, that we've talked about this before, alien worlds must exist statistically.
Sure.
Whether or not they can get to us and interact with us, that, you know, that's a different question, but statistically they must exist, but the speed of light prevents us from having the capacity.
It makes it hard to meet your neighbors.
To go out and find them, which could be because they don't really exist. It's simulation. The universe is finite. Like, there's nothing else.
Guys, what do we do if they explore the whole universe and they don't find a alien life? They're like, don't worry. We're going to make it really hard for them to do that.
Well, right. So you put limitations.
Quadrillions of years to find it.
Right. Yeah. Well, but you put that limitation on it. Okay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So those are the quantum physics factors.
Wow. That was heavy.
I know. And I'm so sorry for the bad science that I may have communicated to an entire generation. That's my bad. So the next one we want to talk about, and we hinted at it a little bit when we talked about Minecraft, is we create our own simulations and see how it goes and see if we can do such a thing. Now, right now, we would assume that we can't actually create conscious living entities inside our simulations. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't think that they're conscious, but you never know. I do think about Steve, and I think to myself, I'm not playing Minecraft. I haven't played that world
in a while. Doing?
What are those animals doing that I have?
Is he like, just sitting there going?
Yeah, Steve. Just what's he doing? Like, is he like, you know? It does. I do think about it because I and that's me putting more humanity on
Steve. Anthropomorphizing Steve.
Then they're.
By the way, for those who have never played Minecraft, the main character is Steve.
Is Steve right?
He's your little, you know, 8-bit rendered guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I do think that. I do wonder about that. I know that it's
so
not.
So do you know what simulation toy actually makes you think about that even more? Because when we play video games, you shut it off. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you come back, it's exactly the same as it was. Do you ever have a Tamagotchi?
No, I never had a Tamagotchi, but that's interesting.
If you leave your Tamagotchi,
they die.
Or you pick him up and he's like starving to death. So they're continuing to be simulated in this dumb little keychain you're carrying around. And that is more like a simulation, right?
Yeah.
That it continues to run and you can check in on it occasionally and God, I hope, feed your poor little Tamagotchi. But it continues to run while you're not interacting with it.
Yeah.
So that's more of a simulation than, say, Minecraft, where it's only running while we're actively participating.
Or you can be AFK.
You could be AFK. Thank you for your gamer knowledge.
I know. and Minecraft is continuing to go on without you. And a lot of times what happens then is mobs find you.
Kill you. Yeah.
Yeah. They, you know, all of a sudden there's a mob and you forget that you're doing something, you know, you go off and you do something else and you're like, oh shit.
Come back and you're
dead. Exploded because a creeper found you. But you can also wall yourself in and just, you know, go and but the game's playing around you. Yeah. So Steve is doing something. He's standing there. He's not he's not moving.
But that's
around,
only as long as your system is plugged in.
Yeah, as long as the system continues working.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if we
Did you have a Tamagotchi?
No.
Oh my God.
I think I was too old for them or something.
Well, I mean that would have been like the 90s, yeah, right?
I was a grown ass man.
I know, but that still seems like something vaguely that you do, Mark.
No. I would not. I was playing a lot of Civilization at that time, which is a simulation, but it's not like on that granular level. I'm simulating, you know, entire countries and stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if we could create our own simulation. Now, here's one thing that I want to kind of interject. Because of our culture right now, when we think of the simulation, what do we think of? What kind of simulation is it?
What do you mean? Like computer?
Yeah. Isn't that what we kind of think of? We think it's a electronic computer simulation
would be,
we can't even grasp.
Well, yeah, that really would be like a massive, massive computer. They did. Right. I saw one thing where they did the math on how big this computer's capacity would have to be.
You basically have to build your own galaxy to simulate a galaxy.
How's the computer? Yeah.
It's like, I built a scale model of the galaxy 1:1. It's like, what's the point of that exactly? Which is basically just the world.
Right? Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. So if we could, you know, as our technology, you know, improves and our chips get faster and our displays better, I mean, you can definitely see some progression from the Tamagotchi, for example, to, you know, any video game you play now, right? Except for Minecraft.
Well, which is Pong to anything that you play now.
Which is deliberately, you know, Minecraft is deliberately old school. But in general, they're much more sophisticated, more realistic. Still not to the point where you're really going to get fooled by it, right? That's one of the tests is, let's see if we can do it, right? And you continue to test. And maybe at a certain point, you run into some insurmountable problem in creating a simulation universe, which may be what we just talked about. Maybe you need something the size of the galaxy to simulate a galaxy. I don't know that that's true, but if we did find that for a rock solid certitude, then we would say, okay, you know, it's not really practical to create a simulation.
Yeah. See, to me, it wouldn't be possible that you would have a galaxy to simulate a galaxy. That would be silly. What it would have to be like more would be like the galaxy can render. And as your character, your AI, like us, as we move around, then that part of the galaxy renders, right?
Right. But you have to, if it's rendering, then you have to have something outside of the galaxy doing the rendering.
Well, right. It's the programming.
Right. So my point is that it's possible that due to restrictions on the smallest particles available and the speed of light and all these other things, which may or may not be real limits, we don't know. But if there is a limit that requires, you know, the level of granularity and specificity and continuity and speed, you would need to be able to harness the power of an entire galaxy to simulate a galaxy. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case or not, but if it was, that would be a good indicator that, okay, maybe we're not living in a simulation because it can't be done. But, I mean, we're going to continue to make simulations. I don't think there's any stopping us at this point.
No, and really what I'll be interested in is when they start, because you have AI, which is simulation.
It is. It's simulated people.
But right now, my game characters, whatever game I'm playing, they need me on my...
Correct.
My
sort of, but you can set them on autopilot in some games.
Well, okay.
You can just say, okay, but I want you to chop down all the wood, and they'll just continue chopping.
Yeah,
regardless of where you are.
All right, but you still have to tell it to do that, right?
Correct.
In this kind of a simulation, it would seem to me that there's probably no one, although some people have theorized this, that they are wearing a headset and they are playing us as characters, that we are characters that they're playing, and whoever you are, fuck off, make some better choices, like some really good financial choices.
I mean, I could use cooler armor.
I mean, what the hell? I think that there's more likely this kind of a simulation would be, you put the simulation into action, and then it does what it does.
Right. When we talked about that last week with the clockmaker.
Yeah. Like the clockmaker, and it just goes. But also the programmer is watching it. And then that gets to the question of, well, why are you doing the simulation? But the programmer is watching it and goes, oh, wait, you know, that happened. Okay, yeah. Well, now let's
see what happens if we kill Hitler. Sooner.
Let's debug. Yeah. Let's get rid of those bugs. That's a bug. Right. We don't like that. Oh, and then
I didn't think about, you know, fluorocarbons really destroying my atmosphere like that.
Right.
I better make some pump spray hairspray.
Yeah, right.
Let's say that we are able to make increasingly realistic simulations. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we're able to create an autonomous artificial person who lives their life in this simulation. Just one person, like we're not, you know, we've used all our computing power, but we've made it so that we have at least one autonomous, self-aware individual inside of our simulation. That would be excellent evidence that A, it's possible. And if it's possible on that scale, it's probably possible on the scale at which we live. Mm-hmm. And then you have to start thinking about some Shakespearean idea of a simulation in a simulation. One other way we could go, rather than trying to build our own simulations, is trying to build a simulation detector. So what sort of things, if you were building a simulation detector, what kind of jobs are you giving it? What do you want it to look for?
Glitches. I'd want it to look for those glitches that maybe we can't see.
Right. So it's got to monitor all the shit.
What's the first one we talked about? Glitches in reality?
Yeah, reality glitches.
Yeah. So I would want it to monitor reality glitches.
And it's like, it'll send you like a text or something. It's like, hey, I saw, you know, two identical black cats walk, you know, across that doorway, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's a glitch. And you would go and check it out and you rewind it, whatever. So you could make, or maybe it would be like a quantum level.
That, but know, isn't detector. That really kind of what the detector is doing with the
sure, but maybe you make a more
experiment?
Sophisticated one to be able to actually track what the hell that little photon is doing, mm-hmm. right? So you could build better technology than we have now.
But that photon's not going to do something as long as it knows it's being observed.
Well, that's what you got to try to make a piece of equipment that will get around that problem, mm-hmm. right? Now, this is imaginary, of course.
Sure.
We don't have it yet, so calm down with holding my feet to the fire there.
I'm not, but
I'm like,
just...
Mark, where is this alleged equipment? I'm like, well, it may shock you to learn that I'm not really much of an engineer. And I can't actually make any of these things that I'm
Mark,
talking about.
This thing doesn't even make sense.
Bro.
Go back to the drawing board, please.
Bro, what do you do? Would you buy this from Ronco? You're going to put it under the sink with your egg scrambler you got for your dad?
And your hair club for
and
men.
And my hair club for your Flobie? So theoretically, you could make tools that would be on the lookout for, you know, simulation activity.
Right.
Measuring Mandela effects, right? Because a computer wouldn't remember Mandela in a wrong way, right? It would monitor the news and it knows Mandela is still in jail. It's not going to go, oh, is he in jail or did he die in the 90s?
Right, you know,
whatever
right.
it was. So you could build a simulation detection system, which I think, honestly, is one of the more practical ways to try to address this problem. I suspect our technology is woefully unprepared for mm-hmm. this, but that seems like you have a better chance of success at building an automated simulation detection tool mm-hmm. than you do just kind of walking around looking for glitches.
Right. Well, because our eyes aren't going to be able to see that necessarily.
Well, you saw it in The Matrix.
Okay. That's not real life, Mark. That's The Matrix. It's a movie.
Well, guess what? This might not be real life either.
I know. Well, it's true. It's true.
All right, so the next one is similar, but possibly more dangerous.
Uh-oh.
An advanced AI.
See, that's tricky though, Mark.
It is. Of course it's tricky. So you could build an AI, the best one we can make, first of all, to see if you can make it achieve a consciousness, right? If you can do that.
Well, that's just building the simulation, kind of.
Sort of, yeah. Although it could be existing in our world, right?
Yeah.
But would an AI be better at detecting whether we're all AIs, right? Does
that's the detector. That's like amping up the detector plan.
Right.
I think you just stick with the detector plan.
You think so?
I don't think you have to go that far.
Well, but people love making AIs.
I know, but I don't think you have to go that far.
You're just afraid that the AI
is
going to go rogue.
No, I don't think it's going to go rogue. But I think
it might.
It could if it has intelligence. If, I mean, actual consciousness, then, you know, yeah. And this is really the question that is fundamental for me, and I guess maybe something that I want to talk about on another episode, which is how much does our understanding of consciousness and what is consciousness, how does that play into all of this?
The answer is it is huge.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like when we say we're in a simulation, if that's what we want to say, I don't think it's a simulation the way we think of it, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of that kind of, you know, some overbeing running the show. What I think it is that we exist somewhere in base reality. We just can't directly access base reality because our perceptions,
right, because that's down to perception.
Are so limited. Our consciousness is, you know, so inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Our memory is not perfect. You know, we have prejudices, mm-hmm. and we make errors in judgment. So I think that is maybe more likely, but that's not a strong argument to say that we're not living in a simulation. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could very well be living in one. Yeah, so advanced AI would be basically fighting fire with fire, right? We're going to create an AI and have them evaluate whether we're living in base reality or a simulation. Mm-hmm. And presumably the AI wouldn't be subject to the same kind of problems we are, which is imperfect sense data and prejudice and, you know, mistakes, bad, faulty memory, et cetera.
Maybe, but see, it's garbage in, garbage out, right? Because still the AI is something that's been created by a human, and we are fallible and we have prejudices. Who's to say that you're not baking those prejudices into whatever that AI is that you've created.
And really what you're doing is you're highlighting the difficulty of trying to do this from within mm-hmm. a simulation, mm-hmm. right? Because there's always, and that's why I think ultimately this isn't an evidentiary claim. There's always a choice of whether an observed phenomenon is evidence that we're in a simulation or evidence we're not in a simulation, mm-hmm. right? It could just be wrong, or you just don't know enough, mm-hmm. or, you know, it was always Berenstain and you just misremembered.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be all of those things. This is, I mean, full on, it is a conspiracy-ish type thing.
Sure.
Although it's being taken, I think, more seriously than like flat Earth.
Well, because first of all, it's not easily disprovable by anyone with an 8th grade science education. Right,
right, right.
So that's why. But it also, I don't think, is going to be resolved anytime soon.
No.
Because, you know, the built-in limitations of trying to prove the existence of something when other explanations work just as well.
So let me ask you this question. So we would be saying that, okay, things have been baked in, like let's say people are correct about the speed of light, mm-hmm. and that is one of the things, that's one of the limitations that has been baked in by
the
programmer, okay? And this programmer did that so that we, the conscious beings living in the simulation, have restrictions. That would say to me that the designer doesn't want us to know that we've been designed. They want to keep us confined to
it. They clearly haven't made it obvious to us, at least if our computer power is so low compared to theirs, we mm-hmm. just can't figure it out. We're just not smart enough to figure it out.
Right.
But yeah, it does seem clear that they did not intend for us to be able to go, oh, I'm in a simulation,
yeah.
You know, whatever. Or perhaps the ultimate goal of their simulation is for us to realize we're in a simulation.
And figure our way out of it.
Or whatever. God, I don't know.
But so then that's the question is then, well, what would be the ethical? Well, they'd live outside of all of our known ethics.
Oh, yeah.
Ethical
systems. I don't even think you can't even try to apply it.
But you cannot ignore the fact that when you're talking about a programmer mm-hmm. or a being who has created this simulation, you cannot help but have it bump up against the concept of God.
Sure.
Then you have to think. Then I think to myself, well, okay, many religions, but certainly in Christian doctrine, it is an all powerful, all good, all knowing being, around which we as humans have built an ethical system.
Sure.
Many of us.
Yeah. I mean, the origins of many ethical systems are religious beliefs.
All right. So then that supposes then that, you know, we've built this ethical system. Is it fair to say then that Is it just us making that ethical system up, or is it in some way that we know? I mean, we say, or religious people would say that in some way the ethical system was communicated to
right.
us.
Right. Revealed knowledge of some sort.
Right. So, you know, like, do you see what I'm trying to get at here? Though?
So
like,
if we have an ethical system that they gave us, does that mean that they have an ethical system?
Or is it our interpretation?
I think it's not necessarily the case, and I'll tell you why. You've played Dungeons and Dragons once in your whole life, mm-hmm. but that is a simulation, right? It's a theater of the mind sort of game. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you it is very common in those games for players, especially inexperienced ones, to take what we call the murder hobo path, which is I just run through every scenario. I kill everybody in front of me. I take their shit and I move on to the next town, mm-hmm. right? With no regard. Now, we would classify them as shitty Dungeons and Dragons players because that's not really very fun because part of it is supposed to be interacting with people. But the murder hobo. Now, these people in real life wouldn't kill anybody, mm-hmm. right? So it's definitely possible to substitute a different ethical system into a simulation that you don't share. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can play games as evil characters, for example. You can play the game as Darth Vader, whatever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that you share Darth Vader's ethos.
No, but would you think it's ethical to create a simulation where there are conscious beings
right.
involved in something that they don't understand is in some way
fake? I mean,
that's a
reasonable question, but I would probably answer it by asking, are they better or worse off for not knowing? Because we do withhold information from, for example, children if we don't think that they're ready for it. So it is possible that if I created a simulation and somehow one of my characters achieves self-awareness, consciousness. Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck. Now what do I do? Do I tell them, hey, by the way, I am your, you know, all-father. I control this universe. I made you. Congratulations. You know, I'll try to help you out a little bit, but you are living in something that is on my desk, right? Just so you know. And, you know, then I have to ask myself, is that fair to that? I mean, I just basically took all the meaning in their life. You know, maybe they were married with another simulated person and they had children and he's working really hard to get ahead in his job or whatever. And I just tell him, like, honestly, bro, I could just hit the space bar and you're gone, you know?
Right.
So that's a legitimate question. And of course, you know, as you mentioned before, then that comes, you know, kind of butts up against our idea of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And at what point do we say that is a person, whether it's a human person or an alien person or a simulated person mm-hmm. that deserves some rights and protection.
And that gets to, you know, that now you're getting into the basic rights, yeah. which are arbitrary.
Well, sure. But I mean, I think there are some general principles that most of us agree to.
Well, no, we agree to them, but yeah. they really fundamentally are arbitrary.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's, you know, they definitely are because they're culturally based, right?
Yeah, it's not something that is imbued in you just because
some people think so.
Some people do, but are there? Right. Are they? You know, I mean, well, some people think that, and are they right or are they wrong? We don't know.
Right.
I would say
definitely they're wrong. But yeah, because remember, I told you that one of my great lifelong projects was going to be to create an ethical system that was objectively founded, but not in a deity, and I failed.
I gave up
after about an hour, I think. Okay. I'm like, oh, I don't know, that seems hard. Maybe I'll just play some soccer or something.
Yeah, I'm just going to go get a beer.
Yeah. And then the last one is really, it's similar to the reality glitches, but really it's just looking for inconsistencies, right? Does science work everywhere? Right. Do we get the same predictable results mm-hmm. everywhere? Mm-hmm. And if not, can we find a way to explain why? Oh, it's because now we're on a heavier gravity planet or because whatever, there's a black hole in the neighborhood, whatever it is. So looking for those kind of inconsistencies, not just, you know, the black cat walking past the door twice, but really, you know, scientific inconsistencies. Like, you know what? Yesterday, water was wet and now it's like fire.
And, yeah, that's not.
And I mean, Christina is now to have see. To throw out all of her 3,000 water bottles because she's not going to drink fire all day, probably. Although she just drank some fire right there.
I just had some water.
You did.
That was
which
a good
is
reminder.
Not fiery in any way.
No,
thankfully.
Okay. Yeah. But see, to me, that again, I think that if you give me the choice, I go with the building the detector.
That's what your best
that's
one
my
is.
Best
I was
one
just going to ask you what yeah. your best one is. So
my
you
best
think
one is the detector.
Building a simulation detector that's going to monitor mm-hmm. all this shit for us mm-hmm. and tell us, and hopefully whoever the programmer is isn't going to hack into our detector.
It's problematic because the detector, as we know from the double slit experiment, yeah. The presence of a detector
May alter things.
So maybe that might not work. I think it's going to end up coming down to us humans doing, unfortunately, having to do the math about it and, yeah. and figuring it out, and they will and get into the gaps where there's just it's not explainable. You
right.
can't. There's no other answer except for it to be.
Recommend like how would you get into those gaps? Would you, for example, fall into the gap in any way in a really deep voice? Would you do that? Possibly,
maybe.
Yeah, I think. For me personally, I think the answer may be somewhere in the quantum realm, but I'm not optimistic. First of all, at root, I don't really think we're in a simulation, although I don't have a really great reason to believe that. I just don't think we are, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the prejudice of having self-awareness, right? You're going to think, well, I can, you know, I'm right here. Mm-hmm. I'm me, bro. I'm not simulated, bro. Mm-hmm. I'm me. But I think the simulation detector, if applied at the quantum level, could maybe yield some results. But I think ultimately it's almost an impossible question because, you know, my friend Occam with his razor.
Right.
You can see a result where it's like, okay, this is an unexpected reality glitch. And you can say it's either we don't understand the science well enough or we're living in a giant complicated simulation. And if both of those arguments equally explain the phenomenon, then you're compelled really to go with the simplest of those two explanations. Mm-hmm. But it's a fascinating question. And I think that right now, I don't think there's a ton more left to do on the philosophical side.
Well, here's what I want to do on our next yeah. episode, and this may be the final episode, is I want to touch in on consciousness yeah. and talk about that. But I also want to talk about what would it mean if we were in a simulation? Let's assume that it's proven.
Right.
And I want to talk about what that would mean to us, because you've made some suggestions sure. already in this episode, but that's what I want to talk about next time.
And when you are playing a game, a simulation game, there are certain kinds of characters that are better than others. I think we would want to argue that the Gen X characters are the best ones. Like, they're just the best kind of character to be.
I agree.
And, you know,
definitely
I mean,
the
you don't
coolest.
Wanna, you're like, oh, I rolled a zillennial. You know, whatever. How disappointing. I'm just going to slouch over here
know.
In the corner.
I like the way the Gen Zs talk. I yeah. like their slang. Yeah. I think it's so think, cute.
It's fire.
I can't even.
You think
even,
it's fire, fam?
No, I like. That's not really. I think that's older now, but.
Still zillennial.
I guess. But anyway, I really like their slang. Yeah. I think that they're yeah. cool. I like the Gen Zs. I don't yeah. have any issue with Gen Zs.
They're dumb.
They're bless unwise.
Yes.
They haven't lived long enough yet.
That's true.
They will. They'll learn.
Presumably.
You know.
I mean, I didn't, but somebody well. Might.
All right. Well, are we all set?
I think we are.
Okay. Well, this is a great conversation.
That's exhausting to run these podcasts,
oh,
by the
boy.
Way.
I think it's such a fascinating conversation. I'm
it
really enjoying this. And I know where we're going after it, after we do our next episode.
Dinner.
Well, we're going to dinner next. But after our last episode on this, we're going to head right over into cannibal territory.
Yes.
You're so excited.
I can't wait. So pumped.
And we're going to talk about Armie Hammer and the documentary about his yeah. family. Yikes.
Hammer time.
Big yikes. Yikes.
They're yikes on bikes.
Yikes on bikes is for sure. All right. Well, everyone, thank you very much for coming and listening to us. We do have some social media we should tell you about. I am at Christina Gen X. Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. And our page is at Extemporaneous True.